Choke Points, brought to you by Online Trading Academy. The I-5 construction in Tacoma has been getting all the attention lately, but a major commuter route into the city is about to be shut down for 9 months. Here's Chris.
A Cairo texter hit me up 2 weeks ago asking me about the latest on the Puyallup River Bridge, and I responded saying, hey, you know, the new bridge is about to open, which it did last weekend. The texter said, no, not that Puyallup River Bridge, not the one on I-5. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'd kind of lost track of the fact that the Puyallup River Bridge on the old Highway 99 in right next to the Port of Tacoma that connects Fife and downtown Tacoma is going to close on Monday for 9 months.
It'll be a total closure because they're going to actually remove those bridge segments and replace them with brand new bridge. And the construction schedule is supposed to take 9 months. So hopefully in 9 months, you'll see a brand new structure there.
Dan Soderlund is a professional engineer with the city of Tacoma who's been working on this project for a decade now. This bridge is 92 years old and in desperate need of replacement. It has been load restricted since 2009 because they were worried about the structural integrity there. Now, it's made up of 7 bridge sections, and only 3 of them are going to be replaced during this project.
We'll replace a concrete span and then a steel truss span that goes over the BNSF railroad, and then there's a final another concrete span. So quite a little project, though, that, you know, basically will be done with about a third of the bridge when we're done.
The plan is to replace the entire bridge at some point, but right now the city doesn't have the money to do that, so they're going to just replace as much of it as they can, which means there's going to be another long-term closure, you know, several years down the road. About 15,000 cars a day use this bridge every day, and they're all going to be pushed to alternate routes like 509, Lincoln Avenue, or I-5 to get around the closure.
I think I would try to go on 509. That facility is a nice big, you know, 4-lane facility, so I think that would be the best bet for me. People can certainly find their own way around and should, but I think my preference would be 509.
Soderlund knows it's going to be a giant pain to do this at the same time that I-5 is going through such a major renovation. He says nothing they can do about this. This bridge needs to get replaced, and right now they have the money to do what they're going to do, so they're going forward with it. When complete, the new section of this bridge is going to look nothing like the current one.
Currently there's 3 lanes, so the new bridge segment will be 4. The truss span that goes over the railroad track, we're not replacing it with another truss. It'll just be concrete girders. So you won't see that big green steel truss anymore. The new segment will have 5-foot wide sidewalk and 5-foot bike lanes in addition to 4 travel lanes.
So you're getting an improvement there.
Nice. Extra lane capacity.
Yeah, they've added capacity. The problem is, like the 520 bridge, since it's not complete, you're going to go from 4 lanes back down to 3 in the middle of the bridge until they replace the remaining segments that they need to do. It's also going to remain load restricted, of course, because of those other segments that have yet to be replaced.
Yeah.
So the money from this, though, is coming from federal grants, most of it. The city and the Port of Tacoma are kicking in much smaller amounts for this, nearly $43 million project. So that's pretty good. Again, this closure starts Monday, and this project has not been getting a lot of attention, even in Tacoma, because everybody's focused so much on I-5. But this is a big commuter route that people use there on old 99 there to get into the city of Tacoma.
And it's not going to be tolled.
No. That did not come up. I don't think they're going to toll 900 feet. That would kind of defeat the purpose.
Okay. Thanks, Chris.
Yep.
Do you love capitalism? I mean, do you really love capitalism? This is Seattle. Of course you do. But nobody loves it as much as Ken Langone, co-founder of Home Depot and a pretty well-known philanthropist, billionaire patron of the NYU Langone Medical Center, and now the author of the book I Love Capitalism, a book he wrote because of what he saw during the 2016 campaign.
Early on, I noticed all these kids gravitating to Bernie Sanders, and it frightened me.
He says the voters who picked Donald Trump wanted to send a clear message.
The message is the American people are fed up with their government and their leaders. They're fed up with them.
And you won't be surprised by his take on the Seattle head tax.
It's dumb. It's dumb. You're encouraging people to move. That helps nobody.
He is one of those persistent people who was not born rich, says he's not particularly gifted, but who never gives up. What may surprise you, though, is he readily acknowledges that he would be nowhere if he hadn't gotten a lot of help along the way. So I figure if anybody has a fix for homelessness, it'd be him. So I asked him about that.
Okay, how about the number of people that are homeless that want to live homeless, but because now we have interpretations of laws that says if somebody wants to live homeless, they have a right to live homeless. Years past, you'd pick them up and say, you want to live homeless, but you're not. We're going to take you to a shelter. I'm not saying there's that much of that. I'm exaggerating, I guess you could say. What I'm saying to you is we have to go ask back to the cause. What's the cause of homelessness? Part of it is people just giving up. Part of it being people who don't have the energy necessary to just hold a simple job.
Yeah.
I know this much. There's an incredible shortage of people in this city for jobs that pay fairly well. I'm talking about New York City.
Yeah.
Guess what? But I don't like the idea that somebody who is mentally ill is capable of making his own decision to live on a grate in January in New York City when it's 5 below 0 or it's 10 above 0, whatever it is. But you can't pick them up anymore because that's their civil right.
So if I there's a guy who is living in a camper up where I park, not far from the station here. If I hand him a copy of your book, I Love Capitalism, and he reads it, you think he could pull himself up?
I hope he does, because that's why I wrote it.
That's what I figured.
I hope he does, because, look, Dave, if you knew me, I'm not the most gifted, I'm not the most intellectually gifted person you'll ever know. I'll kill you with hard work, and I'll kill you with energy.
That's right.
But I'm not especially gifted intellectually. But, Dave, it's amazing what you can accomplish if you set your mind to it. And I did get a good education. I did get a good, in spite of the fact that I'm not intellectually gifted, I did get a good education. And I had parents that taught me wonderful values. My mother ever used to say to me, and it's in the book, the stories of riding through the wealthy, what I call the wealthy section, would you like to live there someday? I said, yes, you will. You're going to have to work hard and get an education. That was the two things I remembered. And I got an education. Bucknell was, why do I support Bucknell like I do? Because of what it did for me. Read the story in the book. NYU, I went to school there at night. Look at what it did for me. I have a moral obligation to support those places. They were there for me when I needed them, and now I've got to be there for them to help somebody else. That's the common good.
Well, I admire you for taking on that responsibility. And I was going to ask you
obligation.
Are there other captains of industry who are not doing their part? And if they all did,
I don't have any right to make that judgment.
Okay.
I don't have what somebody else is theirs. That's a society we live in. We tax everybody. What's left is yours. You do what you want with it. I don't have any right to judge anybody else by their philanthropic activities. I know in my case, and my wife feels the same way I do, we have a moral obligation because, Dave, I'm not self-made. Hundreds of people, and I made it an effort in the book. I'm sure I left names out. But if you go to the acknowledgement section of the book, you'll see lists of names of people. These are all the people that I can remember all through my life that were there for me, that helped me get on my journey.
And that's good that you acknowledge that. But you say it's a moral obligation. You're not passing judgment. I'm going to try to reconcile that. But let me ask you this question then. If everyone of your wealth stepped up and did what you do, would there even be a need for government welfare programs?
Depends on the size of the welfare programs. Dave, in his entire history, Bernie, Arthur, Pat, and I made sure we never, ever, ever hired one person at Home Depot for minimum wage. We always paid above minimum wage by a good margin. We have a simple, practical reason. We want the best people we can get, and we're going to pay for them.
Right.
And we got them. Go to a Home Depot store and tell me how good the service is. Tell me about their attitudes. We've got health insurance for. We've got all kinds of savings plans. Best part of the Home Depot story, we have 3,000 kids that started with us in the parking lot pushing carts in. They're multimillionaires today, and they're still working with us.
That's great.
That's capitalism.
It works. Well, I need to be talking to the guys who are not running their businesses that way so I can rip them
well,
a new
I,
one.
Look, I, all I know is if you look at our success, you have to say, hey, guys, if it ended up that way, maybe we might want to try it that way too.
Ken Langone, co-founder of Home Depot, author of the new book, I Love Capitalism. We're going to put the whole interview up as one of my Boss File podcasts after the show. It went on pretty long. It was supposed to be 15 minutes, but they kept trying to get him to stop it. We went on for about a half hour. I thought it was great. I had a lot more to ask him, too, even though we went a half hour.
And now your daily dose of kindness. I missed this while I was gone. I completely checked out of the news, but I missed hearing about kindness. So this is a good one to return to. Dakota Pitts, he's a young man. He didn't want to show up to school alone. And that's because his first day back, it was his first day back since his police officer dad was killed in the line of duty. And according to WTHI-TV in Western Indiana, he asked his mom if one of his dad's fellow police officers could bring him to school instead. Well, when he showed up on Monday, not just one police officer showed up, but 70 of his dad's fellow officers lined up the pathway to school.
Well, guys, that's what happened. Now you have one too, buddy.
Welcome back to school, bub.
Welcome back.
He kind of wandered through looking a little dazed and amazed at all the police officers, and a SWAT officer has also presented Dakota with his own SWAT shirt and badge during his welcoming back.
7:47 is time for our Sports Insider, brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealers. Colleen, I hate to break it to you, but while you were gone, Robinson Cano.
Oh, yes.
Got in a little bit of trouble or something.
I checked out, but my husband still pays attention to Mariners news. So I heard about the no-hitter and Cano and Nelson Cruz getting bumped in the foot and all that good stuff.
Well, there's no Cano for 80 games, unfortunately, because of that positive test for a banned substance. But on the bright side, the $12 million that he would have earned has now been freed up. So, Danny, how is it going to be spent?
It's a good question. You got some opportunities. At first, I thought they might sign Brandon Phillips, who is an older player, but somebody's been a former All-Star, and he hit 280 last year. I think he's playing with the Atlanta Braves. He's unsigned right now. But the fact that they're moving D. Gordon to second tells me that they're going to end up looking for an outfielder. I'm hoping it's Adam Jones, who is playing outfield on a very bad Baltimore team and is going to be a free agent. Now, he's going to make, I think, $17 million for the rest of the season, and the Mariners have the $12 million in found money. But maybe something can be worked out with the Orioles. We'll see on that one. I'd be interested in that. And otherwise, you got some options, but I think Jones is the best one. Another guy to keep an eye on is Jackie Bradley Jr. in Boston, who is playing terribly this year. And one of the local, he's a Boston transplant who lives here down.
Why would we want somebody who's playing terribly?
Well, because maybe a change of scenery will give him a boost. He's a pretty good player.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a pretty good player. He's never been this bad before, so chances are he's not going to stay this bad, right?
Right.
Like, we give him a chance at redemption.
It's an interesting way to
think
of it.
Yeah, you can buy cheap. Isn't that what they always tell you? Buy cheap. Never buy when the market's at its highest, said the guy who just bought a house.
What I was curious of is that the Mariners could use this money, and maybe I was thinking about the NFL and the guaranteed money and all of that. I didn't know. Do they get paid weekly or monthly, or what's the deal with freeing up that money from Cano?
You know, it depends on the player's contract in other sports. I'm not sure how it is. Wouldn't you like to see that direct deposit?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Yeah. Isn't it just an envelope?
Does it just come? Like, honestly, I don't know. I know I was decent friends with Jerry Stackhouse when he was in the NBA. Uh-huh. And he had negotiated in his contract that he got the whole year's salary on the first day of the season.
And whoa. See, that would at least make some sense when you sign a contract, is that you're guaranteed some money. The fact that he's being suspended and won't get that, and the total is depending on how many games he doesn't play, it's interesting that the money would be freed up. So I was just curious if you knew about that.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know the specifics of how their paychecks. In the NFL, you get them weekly. I know that because Dave Wyman had several early in his career, had several paychecks that were in his sock drawer for a little while because he was a young man living well within his means, and he didn't even bother to cash his paychecks.
Good grief. Let's talk about yesterday's Facebook only broadcast of the game. You watched it on Facebook?
I did. How about you, Dave?
Yeah, we did. We did at my house.
I was busy watching a Smithsonian special on my device. But in any case,
are you being serious? You didn't flip over?
I
you
did
were
not.
On the computer, but you didn't flip over to watch the Facebook game.
Yeah, I did not, because once I get a good solid feed, I don't want to jinx it by switching to something else.
I thought it was okay. I don't like watching stuff on my computer. Like, I just, it's a less than desirable experience for me. And
we
every
just hooked
time
it up to our TV.
Yeah, which I did too. It still wasn't quite the same.
Was it solid or were there hiccups?
It was solid. No, I thought the technology was pretty good.
Well, that's good.
Now, the thing is, you've got like the Facebook interactions going on. So you got the little bubbles floating around and the thumbs up that are coming up. And you've got your window on the right side of it that I had to like position the screen to be able. So it was full. But in general, I'm not a big fan of it. I also, look, I grew up when games weren't all on television. Like, that's a relatively recent phenomenon that you could see every game that your team played in. So I'm not going to complain about the means in which it was delivered to me. What I really enjoyed was listening to Dave Wyman complain about it. Like, that was my favorite part of the Facebook.
He was complaining on Facebook?
No, God, no. Dave, listening to Dave Wyman's explanation of how he had to watch the game, because he doesn't have Facebook. He doesn't want Facebook. In fact, I think he wishes no one had Facebook.
I see.
Like, it's not even, it's not.
He's just a grouch.
Yeah, but it's a pretty funny breed of grouch about it, because then he gets on, he sees a picture immediately that kind of annoyed him. And he's like, why is this here? And his wife's having to explain to him, well, that's the sort of things people post on there. It's okay. And he's mad about the picture because he doesn't think the picture should be shared. He doesn't understand it. And then he ended up clicking on something where he thought he was going to have to pay for Major League Baseball Live, even though this game was free. So he's entering his credit card information. He's probably going to be charged $3.99 for life after all of the things that he optioned. And then when his daughter came in and fixed it, she kept hitting the mad face on his emoji screen, so it kept going up because she was making fun of him being a grouch. So I really enjoyed Dave's
explanation. So apparently the technology's not for everyone. Do you think this would be a win for Facebook? And similarly for Twitter, every once in a while it pops up on my feed too. Hey, the Mariners are playing blah blah, click here. Do you ever click on the Twitter stuff?
I do. They don't have video on Twitter. At least I've seen they collate highlights from people that are following the game is what I've seen. They've had NFL games on Twitter before. I get what's happening. I mean, essentially Facebook paid a ton of money to Major League Baseball to do this, right? Because they know they've got a product people will seek out,
right?
And they want to get people to use Facebook. I hope that that's not the direction sports broadcasting goes, because like I said, I really I'm fine with how it is, recognizing that I'm a 43-year-old person who is developing a very, very
right.
I'm set in my ways sort of thing.
That's for sure.
But if it does go that direction, look, I mean, we're still going to get the games. The technology is still going to be there. It's just going to be a different format.
It's time to let social media call the balls and strikes. Time to crowdsource that puppy.
Oh, my, no.
Dave,
that's what I want to
say. We can agree on nothing online. That would be a mess.
Yeah, it would be terrible. Plus, then you'd have people that would just troll.
Exactly.
Like, hey, we're all going to collate here together and we'll mess with this game. No, that's not what we need, Dave.
Our Sports Insider is brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealers. Thank you, Danny.
10% of all people online are stupid.
Thank you, Danny.
Yep, talk to you soon.
The big story, though, that emerged yesterday is the story of a woman who was raped on Monday in the bathroom of a Ballard car dealership while her car was being worked on. And the accused rapist turns out to be a homeless man who'd been living in a city-sanctioned homeless camp and also had a warrant out for his arrest. Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott is here. She has been covering this. And the big question people have is, if there's a warrant out for this guy's arrest and he is in a city-sanctioned homeless camp, why wasn't he put into jail?
So here's the answer. This guy was living at the Nicholsville Ballard homeless camp for months and months, and he had this warrant out for more than a year. It was issued March of 2017. Cairo 7 got a statement from the officials at the Nicholsville Ballard camp, and what they said was that this gentleman's name, the accused, is Christopher Teal. He's 24-year-old from Texas who's been here for 2 years. They said he had to show a valid state-issued ID so he could be checked against their King County's transient sex offender database before he could move in, but they did not do a warrant check, and it's because they never do. It's just not something they do. And they say until this last week, until this happened, they had no idea that he had a criminal history at all. As for the police, Seattle Police Sergeant Sean Whitcomb says all officers are actively looking for people who have warrants, and the department even has a fugitive task force. And while the city does work with sanctioned encampments in some capacity, it does not involve any warrant checks.
I can tell you when we're checking someone for warrants, typically, in most cases, it's the product of a detention. So the idea of us checking someone for a warrant, generally speaking, they are being detained by us. They are not free to leave. And so I think that's a little bit different than someone who is seeking or receiving shelter services.
Okay. But, I mean, they are checking the sex offender status of somebody seeking shelter services. So what's the substantive difference between that kind of check and a warrant check? You're apparently looking for somebody who might be dangerous to others in the community. And if you think that a record of sex offenses is worth checking, why not somebody who's got a warrant?
So what it sounds like, and again, this is Seattle Police has nothing to do with checking the sex offender status of anybody living in these homeless camps. Mm-hmm. This is something that the homeless camps are doing on their own. So the Nicholsville statement said they looked, they compared his ID, his name, to its list of King County transient sex offenders. So I don't even know that this is necessarily the regular sex offender registry that you would look at if you were a law enforcement agency.
This it's
something they have access to that's specific to King County and specific to transients that are on that list. Again, that was an emailed statement, so not a lot of elaboration there, but that would be my takeaway on that. So as for criticisms about SPD not releasing details about this case until yesterday, 2 days after that attack happened, Whitcomb says it's a decision that's made on a case-by-case basis. And in this case, he believes was the right call.
When we made the decision to not proactively publicize what happened to this woman, that was 100% based on our respect for her privacy, knowing that this might buy her a day, 2 days, or even indefinitely, because not all violent crimes are tracked in the news.
And he says sexual assaults often go unreported, so it's very important for law enforcement to handle this type of case very carefully.
When people learn of these things, if they know someone who's the victim of a sexual assault or if they've been sexually assaulted themselves, they watch us closely to see how we handle it. And we value transparency so much at SPD, but when it came to this particular case, because there was no immediate safety risk to the public with the suspect being in custody, there was no second suspect, there was no getaway driver, we felt confident that we made the right call.
Okay, well, that's up to them. I think the thing that's got people steamed is the fact that you can have a warrant out for your arrest, mm-hmm. you can check into a city-sponsored homeless camp and nothing happens. Although apparently, now I assume that if you come up on the sex predator database, they don't let you into the camp, right?
Yes, no sex offenders. And
but then do they also call the police and say, hey, this guy is somewhere he shouldn't be?
Yeah, I don't think that that's a crime. They're not allowed to live there, right? But they're not, if they're registered sex offenders,
okay. Currently committed. So they've done their, in other words, they filter out somebody who is not even, who's not even committed a crime, but when they're asked to keep somebody out who has committed a crime and therefore has a warrant out for their arrest, they don't check for that.
And we're talking about two different crimes. Well, and if you're on any kind of sex offender list, you've committed some crime at some point.
Right, but you've done your time. Presumably you're released because you're not dangerous anymore, even though you had this history. But if there's a warrant out for your arrest, that means that you still owe society something here, like an appearance in court. And yet that they won't check for.
That they do not check for. And look, I'm playing just a little bit devil's advocate here. We can have this particular guy. He has a warrant in this case because he failed to show up for a court appearance on a trespassing charge.
Uh-huh.
Other people get warrants out because they failed to show for like a traffic court thing. So
it's
a wide
open.
Yeah, it might be such a. But how do you tell, right, if you check against everyone? But, should they? Probably.
Right. Kyra Reeders, Hannah Scott. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.